Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. We have some great guests on for you today. In the first half, we're talking to Johnny Bowden. We're going to talk about superfoods like resveratrol. And in the second half, we're talking to Megan Gunther. She's a nutritionist who's going to be talking about live ferments and vitamins. But first, here we have Alan with the Health First News.
If you think having just one cigarette a day won't do any harm, you're wrong. British researchers say lighting up just once a day was linked to a much higher risk of heart disease and stroke than might be expected. The bottom line? No safe level of smoking exists for cardiovascular disease, wrote the team led by Alan Hacksaw of UCL Cancer Institute at University College, London. The study authors said smokers should quit instead of cutting down, using appropriate cessation aids if needed, to significantly reduce their risk. And it's a warning to the young that even so-called light smoking carries a heavy price, one expert said. Young adults often smoke lesser amounts than older adults, noted Patricia Folan, who directs the Center for Tobacco Control at Northwell Health in Great Neck, New York. The study was published January 24th in the BMJ. A procedure that plucks stroke-causing clots from blood vessels in the brain may be useful in many more patients than previously thought, new research shows. In the emergency procedure called thrombectomy, doctors snake a catheter device through blood vessels to grab and remove the blockage. Now, a major new study finds that the procedure remains effective in patients with ischemic stroke, which occurs when a blood clot marks the brain's blood flow, for up to 16 hours after a stroke, rather than the current recommended limit of 6 hours. That could mean reductions in death and disability for a much wider group of patients, the researchers said. Nearly half of all patients treated between 6 and 16 hours after the onset of their symptoms were largely spared from the consequences of their stroke, said lead investigator Dr. Gregory Albers. He directs Stanford University's Stroke Center. The findings were published online January 24th in the New England Journal of Medicine. Poor sleep may make your children more than just grumpy, a new study suggests. Kids who don't get enough sleep are more likely to be obese later on, researchers report, and that might even boost their odds for cancer decades later. The study of 120 U.S. children, average age 8, linked poor sleep quality to higher body mass index, an estimate of body fat based on weight and height. Study author Bernard Fumiller explained childhood obesity very often leads to adult obesity. This puts them at greater risk of developing obesity-related cancers in adulthood. He is Associate Director for Cancer Prevention and Control at Virginia Commonwealth University's Massey Cancer Center in Richmond. The findings were presented this week at an American Association for Cancer Research meeting in Austin, Texas. While you might think most people would try to change unhealthy behaviors after a major health scare like a stroke, new research suggests most people don't. They may even pick up worse habits. Fewer than 1 in 100 stroke survivors met all 7 heart health goals identified by the American Heart Association, and just 1 in 5 met 4 of those goals. Dubbed Life's Simple 7, the goals include not smoking, eating a healthy diet, getting regular physical activity, achieving a healthy weight, and controlling high blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar levels. The proportion of stroke survivors who met none or one of those goals grew from 18% between 1988 and 1994 to 35% between 2011 and 2014, the study found. The study was scheduled to be presented at an American Stroke Association meeting in Los Angeles.
We have Johnny Bowden with us today. He's the author of 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, Low Carb, Living Low Carb, and the Great Cholesterol Myth, as well as Smart Fat, Eat More Fat, Lose More Weight. He's also a columnist, and he is on an advisory board for the Men's Health magazine. Just a wealth of knowledge. And today we were going to pick Johnny's brains about resveratrol and other superfoods. Welcome, Johnny.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. Good to be here again.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. So are you writing any new books lately?
I'm about to release a weight loss program on the internet that'll be out in June called Metabolic Factor. We're re-releasing that. But right now, the 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth just had its 10th anniversary updated edition. And I'm offering for anybody who buys it, which I hope you will, because it's all been updated and it's been out 10 years and it's been a bestseller for 10 years and translated into 4 languages. And anyone who will buy that, just send me the digital receipt at info@johnnybowden.com and we'll send you the brand new ebook, The Varnished Truth about vitamins and minerals. It's an ebook I did on all the major vitamins and minerals and seven super supplements, which we're actually going to be talking about one of them today. And I go into depth about which ones you need as supplements, which ones you don't need, what they do, and all that. And I would love to send that for free to anyone as a bribe for buying the new edition of the 150 Healthiest Foods.
That's wonderful, Johnny. What has changed in 10 years, though, since your book was out?
I'm so glad you asked. So when I read this book, when the company came to me and said, let's do a 10th anniversary edition, I thought, well, what could really change? I mean, great food is great food. And I was so amazed at reading every one of these entries, how many things needed to be updated. For example, there are a lot of foods around now that we didn't have then that were not in the book. Jackfruit, for example, or collagen protein powder, many, many things that macadamia nut, Malaysian palm oil. A lot of foods that were not generally available and that people didn't talk about are now available and people want to know about them. Camel's milk. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. The second thing I think that's changed is that in 2007, when I first wrote this book, I was still taking a somewhat tentative and somewhat conservative position on issues I felt strongly about, such as the fact that we have been massively misled about the dangers of saturated fat. But in 2007, people weren't quite coming on board with that yet, so I pointed things out like perhaps saturated fat's not as bad for us as we thought, and perhaps this and perhaps that, and I was kind of a little bit pussyfooting around the issue. And now, 10 years later, with 10 years of research in epidemiological studies and publications in journals like the British Medical Journal and JAMA and Annals of Internal Medicine, we can now say for sure, and I took a much stronger position on this, that we have just been fed a crock about the dangers in our diet. It is not saturated fat. It never was saturated fat. It is sugar. And there's a massive amount of evidence in the last 10 years to show that. So this is all stuff that is in the new book, where we really get into some of these details about what's the difference between grass-fed and organic. What's the difference between what about GMO foods? What about vitamins? We talk about all these things in the new edition of the 150 Healthiest Foods. So we're getting great feedback on it. People use it like an encyclopedia. I'm so proud to say that I got the trifecta of endorsements. Dr. Oz, Mark Hyman, David Perlmutter all gave me blurbs for this, and many, many other A-list names that I'm so grateful to have had endorsed the book. So
wonderful. Tell me, what do you think of this grass-fed butter and MCT oil in your coffee? What's that doing for everybody?
And that's all in the book, by the way. MCT oil, coconut oil, there are differences between MCT oil and coconut oil that many people are not aware of. And I explain the differences, and everyone thinks they're identical, and they're not. They're both good, but they're good for different things.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your grass-fed question, I am a zealot on grass-fed meat. And that means all the products that come from grass-fed beef, including grass-fed butter and grass-fed yogurt and all of that. If the only meat that were available to me in America was factory-farmed food, which is what 95% of restaurants serve, what 95% of grocery stores serve, the chopped meat that you see in the grocery store is all coming from factories. If that were the only kind of meat available to me, I would become a vegetarian. I am that adamant about the difference between grass-fed and regular. Regular meat is toxic. All the vegetarians have that right. What they don't have right is that it's not toxic because it's meat. It's toxic because it has added hormones, steroids, antibiotics. It is just a toxic. These poor cattle are a toxic waste dump for everything bad in the environment that has been plunged into them to make them grow faster and get slaughtered quicker. So that kind of meat is absolutely off the menu. Grass-fed, 100% grass-fed, is a different, forgive the stupid pun, but it's a different animal.
That's great. No, that's super. So in the meat world, it's really, really important to know your source and to know how it's been taken care of.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And going back to our superfoods and our vegetal superfoods, what are some of the top ones that we can really be nourishing our bodies with?
I wouldn't have normally started with this one, but since you brought it up, grass-fed beef is a health food, a superfood. It is just loaded with vitamin B. It's got all kinds of, amazing nutrients in it. The fat in grass-fed beef has a lot of omega-3s and not as much omega-6, which is the reverse of what happens in factory farmed meat, which is very inflammatory. So I would call grass-fed beef, 100% grass-fed beef, a health food. I would call wild salmon a health food. I would call superfood. I would call blueberries. In fact, all four berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, and blackberries, all four of them are superfoods, berries in general. But blueberries kind of make the top of the list because there's just been so much research associating them with better memory and longer lives and just all kinds of wonderful things in animal experiments and some epidemiological human experiments as well. Studies as well. So blueberries would be up there. I like, certain cooking oils, and I'm very fond of coconut oil and Malaysian palm oil. And as far as superfoods nutritionally, there's, foods are like, this is what I always say, Kathy, foods are like friends. You have friends that are great to go to a basketball game with, but you might not want to talk about the intimate details of your marriage. You have another friend who is great for intimate conversations about personal things, but you really don't want to go to a sporting event with them. So people are good, friends are good for different things. No one food gives you everything. One of the best foods in the world, wild salmon, has no fiber. No protein source has fiber. So you're not going to get some of the best vegetarian sources of plant, or some of the best plant foods in the world, loaded with all kinds of things, don't have any omega-3s. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to get all the things you desperately need for running a healthy body for 10 or more decades. You're not going to get from one food. So the notion that, there's this one food you eat and now everything's great, it's really a misnomer. It's not exactly how it works. A superfood diet is a balance of many different things. I like to think of it more like the in heavy rotation on the top 40 stations. These are the songs. You're going to hear them over and over again. They're going to keep coming up on the playlist, and that's your playlist. You need a playlist like that of foods, not one food, but a number of them. And when you get that kind of in heavy rotation, then you're eating a diet that's heavy loaded, front loaded with superfoods.
Mm-hmm. So the main changes to your books are the grass-fed beef, the salmon, the oils, the saturated fats. Those are the biggest changes?
Between wild salmon and farmed salmon, there's a huge difference.
Can you tell us a bit about this farmed salmon, which they're selling in the stores?
It's not my favorite. I mean, I guess if pressed and you said to me, here's an American, he is not going to eat, he's going to eat either farmed salmon or nothing, I would say yes, farmed salmon. On balance, eating some of it rather than eating none of it, I would advise. But the difference between farmed salmon and wild salmon is almost as great, not quite, but almost as great as the difference between grass-fed beef and factory-farmed beef. Farmed salmon lives in the same horrendous living situation, and I'm not talking even about loving animals and you won't want the fish to suffer. I'm just talking about the health conditions of salmons raised in pens. Mm-hmm. It's horrendous, and they have to be fed tons of antibiotics to keep them alive. And they're artificially colored. Instead of getting their color from the natural, from the krill that they eat naturally in the live, that has this deep red, rich red color, astaxanthin, which is a powerful antioxidant, is found in the normal diet of wild salmon. That's not there in farmed salmon. So they color it literally with food colorings, or the version of food coloring. So farmed salmon is the Environmental Working Group, which is a nonprofit organization that puts out the Dirty Dozen list every year, like the most contaminated foods they test. They think that salmon is the number one source of PCBs, number one protein source of PCBs in the American diet.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not a fan of farmed salmon. I mean, wild sockeye salmon, I get mine delivered. There's a company called Vital Choice. I don't have a financial interest in them. I just love them, and I get all my stuff from them. They send it. It's packed in Alaska. It's sent right to you, and it's pretty pristine and pretty great.
That sounds good. Johnny, we're going to have to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking more about great nutrition.